It's time for Let's Talk with Brian Pettaway.
Good morning and happy Sunday. Welcome to Let's Talk. I am your host, Brian Pettaway. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I appreciate you listening in on this dreary Sunday morning. It is, in fact, your stereotypical type of fall morning. You know, it's overcast, it's a little chilly, it's rainy, not as cold as it could be, but it is a little chilly. And it's just one of those days that makes you not want to get out of bed. You know what I mean? So don't. Relax, stay in bed, let me entertain you, stay engaged to the show. I've got a show I think you're going to enjoy. It's one that is a bit controversial. It's a topic that I actually tackled well over a year ago in one of my first shows. But it's not something that's up on my website. I got a lot of feedback from it. I got some flack behind it. But I wanted to run a segment of that show back because nothing has changed. In fact, it's gotten worse, and it's about the emasculation of black men in media. So I wanted to run that back, my dialogue. I didn't have a guest for that show. It was just me talking about the things that I have found when researching the topic that made me feel that, hey, maybe I'm not going crazy. Maybe there is some agenda and masterful planning and strategizing in the media, in particular in Hollywood, to make the black man less desirable and masculine to the black woman. I'll tell you what purpose that serves and give you some numbers and some pretty strong evidence to back that up. I've also got the Petty here with me. Of course, he's going to give us a rundown on NFL games and picks today. The Monday night game, the Thursday night game. There's so many games being played currently in the NFL that he has to keep up with that I am so glad that it is him that is keeping up with these games. But he's going to give you the picks, hopefully put some money in your pocket. We're going to hear from him, obviously. But first, you've got me, and I'm going to give you some news and commentary, which is what I love to do. We also have our Sunday fun facts. So I hope you're feeling great because I'm feeling great. I've got lots to talk about today. So let's get right to it. There was a pair of carjackings that happened this week at the Mount Washington Pediatric Hospital on West Rogers Avenue. And in an interview about these carjackings with Mayor Scott, a Fox 45 reporter asked the mayor, why should Baltimore citizens feel safe when there's been such a rash of car thefts and carjackings in the city? And the mayor responded in a fashion that has become his MO that drives me insane. It's called deflection. And so when asked the question, why should Baltimore citizens feel safe here in the city of Baltimore? This is what his answer was.
It doesn't matter where you are. This can happen to you anywhere in the country.
See, that right there is called an answer through deflection, which is basically a non-answer. It's almost like saying, well, it's just as bad over there as it is over here. So why are you complaining about it being bad over here? If you go over there, the same thing's going to happen. We don't care about what's going on over there. We care about what's happening here, where we live, where we drive, where we work, where we play. What are you, sir, as the mayor, doing about what's happening over here? Stop talking about what's happening over there. You understand what I'm saying? It drives me crazy. He did a very similar thing when asked about the shootings at Morgan State 2 months ago. This is what he said then.
This is why I'm going to continuously say that this is a national epidemic that we have to deal with at the national level.
Yes, sir, we know that gun control in this country is a national epidemic. We understand that gun laws are not being pushed through. Got all of that. The question is, though, what are we going to do about the students at Morgan State, at Coppin State, at Towson State, and all of the other schools, high schools, and colleges within your city, under your watch? What are we going to do to make the students feel safe, the parents feel safe about sending their kids to these schools as students? That is the question. And to his credit, after he says silly things like this, he sometimes goes on to explain what's going to be done at the local level. My question is, why do you have to mention what's going on in the rest of the country? It doesn't make the situation here look any better. And listen, I know you're like, B, you so hard on the brother. I am hard on the mayor. I am. And it's because I want him to be better, not necessarily out of office, but better in the office. Because right now it looks like Sheila Dixon would be his replacement. And I am not convinced by any measure that she would be better for the city of Baltimore than what we have right now. Also in the news last week, but not local, Representative George Santos has been expelled from the House after almost 100 Republicans joined almost all Democrats in voting to remove him from the chamber. Mr. Santos joins only a handful of lawmakers ever ousted from their role following a damning 56-page report from the House Ethics Committee, which outlined substantial evidence that Mr. Santos violated federal law. All right, so this is great. It's about time. Now, again, this is unprecedented. It's only happened 5 times ever. Where a member of the House has been voted out. Now, the difference between George Santos and all of the others is that he has not yet been convicted of a crime. He has been suspected of crimes, but has not been convicted of one. So for him to be ousted, to be voted out prior to that, is something that has never happened before. In addition to that, though, why did it take so long? We've known that this guy has been shady since we've known this for over a year. We've known that his entire resume has been fabricated for a long time. So if you are not anything who you say to be on your resume, meaning you're not the person that you claim to be, which got you the job, once you've been found out that you're not this person, how is it that you managed to keep the job? Especially one as important as a congressman, where you are voting on the way people live. I don't understand how that works. I will never understand politics, really, which is probably one of the reasons why I never got into it. But what we now know is in addition to fabricating his resume and lying about everything on it, we also know now that he used his campaign funds for complete personal use, for his rent, to take trips and travel, to shop, and a substantial subscription to OnlyFans, a porno site. Now, the U.S. Attorney's Office, Eastern District of New York, has charged Santos with conspiracy, wire fraud, false statements, falsification of records, aggravated identity theft, and credit card fraud. Those are serious, serious charges of which he's going to have to stand trial for. In the meantime, however, he's talking about doing reality TV. Is this guy nuts? Like, he's got big issues. In fact, it's alleged that Santos is charged with stealing people's identities and making charges on his own donors' credit cards without their authorization, lying to the FEC, and also leading multiple additional fraudulent criminal schemes. I mean, George Santos is the ultimate piece of work. I mean, he really is. And he takes white privilege to a whole new level. I mean, he did all of this. And even under shady conditions where people knew that his resume was completely false, sat in Congress, proposed bills, voted on bills, and collected a congressional check. I am so eager to see if he is prosecuted and sent to prison. I really am. And finally in the news, a long-term ceasefire has been agreed to between Israel and Palestinian militants in the Gaza Strip. Now, the truce ending 7 weeks of fighting that has left more than 2,200 people dead, mostly Palestinians, was brokered by Egypt and began at 7 o'clock on Tuesday of last week. According to Israeli officials, they will begin to ease its blockades of Gaza to allow in aid and building materials. Now, Hamas has said that the deal represents a victory for the resistance, but indirect talks on more contentious issues, including Israel's call for militant groups in Gaza to disarm, will begin in Cairo in about a month. You know, this is going to be a very complicated situation for a very long time. And unfortunately, no one wins. No one is a winner in this situation, not Israel, and certainly not the Palestinians and Hamas. But I am so glad that there has been some type of truce negotiated and that there has been a ceasefire and the release of several hostages between the two. All right, well, now it's time for Sunday Fun Facts. I want to get right to it because we don't have a whole lot of time. So in light of the time, I'm going to give you three. I think you guys will enjoy them. All right, Sunday Fun Fact number one. Banging your head against a wall for 1 hour burns about 150 calories. Again, banging your head against a wall for 1 hour can burn up to 150 calories. So how badly do you want to lose weight? And have you tried this yet? I'm just saying. All right, Sunday fun fact number two is crows often hold grudges against specific people. Crows, the bird, crows apparently are excellent at recognizing people's faces and are able to remember people for a long time. Now, this can either be a positive or negative fact, depending on how nice you are to the crow. While crows can tell us apart, we would have a very difficult time distinguishing one crow from another. And the last Sunday fun fact for today is that during your lifetime, you will produce enough saliva to fill 50 bathtubs. The average person produces roughly 1 ounce of saliva every hour. That's 24.3 ounces or one full wine bottle's worth of saliva a day, which is an average of 69 gallons per year. With the average global life expectancy of people of being about 72 years, this means you produce an average of 4,968 gallons of saliva in your lifetime, enough to fill 50 bathtubs. Now, I don't know why I thought you needed to know that, because you really don't, but I don't know. I just thought the shit was interesting, that's all. So there you go. Okay, so let's shift up a little bit and start talking about the topic of the day. Now, about 2 years ago, I was locked in a house watching TV just like everybody else because of COVID. And during that time, I noticed something that I typically wouldn't have noticed had it not been for COVID and being locked in the house. I usually watch documentaries when I turn the TV on or watch some sports. But during COVID, I started binging on TV shows and seeing shows that I typically wouldn't see or watch. And I noticed something pretty interesting. I noticed that on a lot of TV shows, there are a lot of interracial couples with black women and white men. Okay, no problem, right? But what I also noticed on a lot of these same shows is that the only black men on these shows were often gay or transgendered. And I thought to myself, well, that's interesting, right? Then I noticed, like, on a lot of shows that were run on black network television, like BET or a lot of them on Tubi, I started seeing a lot of HIV medical prevention commercials. And almost everybody in these commercials were effeminate gay black men. And I thought that was interesting. So effeminate that it was almost like uncomfortable. You know what I mean? And I thought to myself, like, I haven't been out of touch for that long. Like, when did this stuff start? And then something happened. I was watching a football game and car commercials started coming on, like right around Christmas. And five car commercials in a row featured black women with white men in these car commercials and the biracial kids behind them. And I just thought, that is like, what the hell is going on? I know that we are only 13%, I'm talking about black people now, are only 13% of the population in this country. So how can there be a black woman for every white man on every TV show? How can that possibly be? And if we are only 13% black people again of the population of this country, and only 3% of the total population of this country is gay, how can there be a gay black man in every show where there is an interracial couple between a black woman and a white man? How is that possible? This is not art imitating life. This is art trying to persuade life, trying to drive an agenda. But I thought, what would be the purpose in that? And unless there's a correlation between emasculating the black men and promoting black woman, white man, interracial relationships, maybe that is the agenda. But why would that be the agenda? So I started doing my homework. And I did a show on this a year ago. And well, apparently I wasn't the only person feeling something about this. There was a buzz about this, emasculation situation in the media. And I read an article by a journalist who writes for The Guardian, and her name is Tayo Biro. And she wrote an article called "The Emasculation of Black Men Isn't a Real Thing." And I was like, how can that, like, what? So I read the article. Now, mind you, this is written by a woman, okay? And she said, here's the thing. Emasculation isn't real. It only exists as a tool to reinforce patriarchal violence. And the term's origins go back to the 17th century Latin term for depriving something of its male functions, virility, or procreative power. Essentially, emasculation means making someone less of what society would define as a man. Now, I find that interesting, having been written by a woman, okay? And I'm not trying to be sexist here, but I'm going to explain to you why I felt that way in a second. The thing that I found most interesting that she wrote was, and although this obsession with manliness cuts across cultures, black people's experience of it is unique. She goes on to say, the great emasculation conspiracy that has long been pushed in the black community is a product of both church and culture, and the long and brutal history of sexual violence as a tool of white supremacy. Now, full stop, okay? Okay, so the first thing she says is that masculinity is only masculinity in its definition by what society has deemed it to be. Well, I agree with that, as are most things, right? But if half of society, at least half, is influenced by men, and we have deemed what makes us feel more like men or feel more manly as something masculine, what makes it less so because men say it's so, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's us. It's what we feel that is masculine. It is what we feel that makes us feel more like a man. It is what we feel that makes us more attractive to the opposite sex, right? I mean, it's worked since the beginning of time. We have done things that men feel like we should do as men that have drawn the attraction of women because women find it masculine as well. So I don't understand what Ms. Tayo Biro is writing and stating that it's only because society deems that is masculine. Well, black men are a huge part of black society. Yes, we have deemed what masculinity to us is and what it feels like. Why is that a problem? And why, as a black woman, are you disputing what black men feel as being masculine? She also, in her article, references a writer named Thomas Foster, who in his book explains that both enslaved men and women endured violations of their bodies and a general lack of consideration for their privacy. They were both scrutinized, groped, and objectified by enslavers. To this day, the rape of male slaves is frequently remembered as being more objectionable than the rape of female slaves because it emasculated the men. That history and the patriarchal lens through which we misunderstand it have helped support all the theories about the effort to feminize black men. Now, I'm going to tell you why that pisses me off. It annoys me because history has taught us that black male slaves, the strongest ones, a lot of times were subjected to what was called buck breaking, in which black men were raped with objects or by white men in front of their women and children as a way to make these strong black men more docile, humiliated, emasculated, and less attractive and desirable to their women. Well, we're not in chains anymore as black people. Black men are not involved in chattel slavery. We have an opportunity to walk around as quote-unquote free men, but that does not mean that our manhood, our masculinity, is still not being raped in front of our women and children in a far more sophisticated way. And in that same article, she wrote this. Okay, let's take the term at its original definition. If something makes you feel less of a man, we need to interrogate what it means to be a man and why that needs to be so strictly enshrined, so fiercely protected. The reality is, being a man doesn't really mean anything. And in defending masculinity, what men are really defending is the power that has been socially ascribed to manhood, not any special qualities that are inherent to being a man. She goes on to write in this article, and I'll leave it at this. The last thing she wrote was, we've gotten used to the idea that pushing back against emasculation is a legitimate way of defending male dignity and even securing women's coveted position as wives, when really it's always been about protecting power. And power is something that these men definitely don't need more of. Now, this is an award-winning journalist, black woman, writing about a black man's manhood, which, by the way, is very, very closely tied to our dignity. When I read this article, it incensed me. It annoyed me so much that I had to walk away from my computer. Because how dare you, black woman, who wants to be protected by black men, right? Tell us that our masculinity means nothing, that our definition of manhood means nothing, when oftentimes, because of our entire existence as black men in this country, meant that the only thing that we had to hold on to was our manhood, our masculinity. It is the thing that has always been the most feared by anybody else, is our masculinity. How dare you black women not understand that? Again, this is a brilliant, beautiful black journalist who does not understand clearly what masculinity, manhood, and dignity means to a black man. That oftentimes the only thing we were left with was our pride, our masculinity, and our manhood. And it meant everything to us. It is the reason why we still survive as a race of people. If we didn't have those three things as black men, we would have been gone, extinguished, many, 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 many moons ago. But that is not what has happened. We have held on to those things because they are incredibly important. And here's the scary thing. Black women used to understand that. They used to protect that. They used to covet that in their black men. Well, now, because they're blinded by the bag and the power, they don't care to see it anymore. They don't respect it anymore. And they don't understand that there are certain people in this country with enormous power and money, wealth that we will never comprehend, who recognize that some black women, a lot of black women in this day and age, are completely blinded by the power and the bag. And they have been placed in the driver's seat and the vehicle created to drive our race right over the cliff. And black women like this Miss Teo Biro are far too eager to get behind the fucking wheel. Now, I'm in my 50s, and I am fortunate enough to have met women in my age group that still understand and respect how much a man, in particular a black man's dignity, masculinity, and manhood means to him. And they protect it, and they covet it, and they respect it, and they love it. So I'm fortunate to be in the age range that I am, to have that close to me. However, I fear for those that are 40 and younger, because you're going to have a hard time, especially our young black men. And that's not to suggest that as young black men, you don't have to get it together. But good grief, it is going to be hard for you. So listen, what I'm going to do is I'm going to run back the segment that I aired a year ago about the emasculation of black men in media, and it's going to have all the numbers and all of the things that I discovered, and then we'll get to the petty. All right? So what I'm going to do is really shift some gears right now and talk about something that I'm sure is going to, it's going to rub some people the wrong way, and I'm sure that I'm going to get some flack about. But what I'm hoping more than anything is that we look at things a little differently and think about things a little bit more when I'm done speaking on this topic. Before I even get started, though, I want to first state that this conversation that I'm about to have with you has nothing to do with me disliking, trying to discredit, or shame in any way the LGBTQ community. I've done more than my share of defending gay rights and people's right to live and love who they want to love. However, all of that being said, there is, I believe, a large push within the media of whom I am now a part to emasculate the image of the black man. I know, Brian, why are you going to go on here and talk about something when you know nothing good can come from the conversation? Well, I disagree. And as I said, all I want is people, in particular black women, to pay attention to what is being supported by them in the media. I had a conversation with a few people at my uncle's home not too long ago, one of them being my brother, where we talked about all of the shows that are currently on TV that showcase black men as homosexuals. I'm not going to use the word normalize because I don't think homosexuality is abnormal. It's been with us since the beginning of time. And to me, anything that has been with us since the beginning of time, well, it's not abnormal. I mean, it's written about in the Old Testament, and it's not written about in the Old Testament because it wasn't a thing. It's written about in the Old Testament because it was a thing, because it has always been a thing, and because it will always be a thing. And that thing is human beings being attracted to who they are attracted to. For me, end of story. Now, there are all kinds of debates out there as to why homosexual people are homosexuals. I don't know why. I don't care why. What I do believe, though, is that it is not a conscious choice to desire one sex over the other. I believe that you are either born homosexual or something happens traumatic within your life before your sexual core values are established that influences your desires and your attraction to one sex over another. Now again, those are just my beliefs, and as a heterosexual man, all I can do is theorize based on the conversations that I've had with gay friends, male and female, and how early in life they recognized that they were attracted to the same sex. So again, I don't believe that this is a conscious choice. I don't believe it's something that can be counseled out of a person in the way of therapy or hypnosis, that can be prayed out of a person like some exorcism. And I believe spreading misinformation like that is and has been extremely dangerous and damaging to the homosexual community. I especially have an issue with how the church has traditionally handled the topic of homosexuality, in particular the black church and Catholicism, simply because of the hypocrisy displayed each Sunday in both. But again, that is not the subject of today's show, but I had to get that out of the way because I need you to know that my issue is not with the LGBTQ community, because they are LGBTQ. My issue is how black men are now being represented in the media and the agenda that I believe is driving this representation. Back in the early days of television and movies, the only way black actors could make a living as actors was to not just be a black actor. We had to be subservient, buffoonish, and cowardly on the screen in order to make whites feel comfortable and, most importantly, not feel threatened by our presence. Lincoln Theodore Monroe Andrew Perry, better known by the stage name Stephen Fetchett, was an American vaudeville comedian and film actor of Jamaican and Bahamian descent. He was considered the first black actor to have a successful film career. In his heyday in the 1930s, in films and on stage, Stephen Fetchett was billed as the laziest man in the world. And for his role in perpetuating the stereotype of the lazy black man, he was handsomely paid and became the first black actor to earn over $1 million. As time went on and blacks began to gain a consciousness about ourselves and how we're being portrayed on screen, Stephen Fetchett became less and less popular and became an embarrassment to us and lost his popularity, and subsequently his career ended. Now, what I want to do is just try and shed some light today on what I'm seeing, or what I think I'm seeing. I'm not a scholar, but I read a lot and I watch a lot of documentaries and I pay attention to what the hell I'm watching. And I try to look at things from different angles, not because I theorize conspiracies. I'm not typically a conspiracy theorist. I don't even typically like those people. But when something is in your face constantly for no reason, you have to think why. It has to make sense. I mean, there's got to be a reason. Most of us already know that the things that we watch on TV, in particular TV series, are not actually art imitating life. And if it is, it's art trumping up life to the nth degree. But more times than not, it's art trying to persuade life. And that is no different from the shows that I'm about to mention. The Wire, 9-1-1, Power Book 2, Ghost, Force, Power Book 4, Empire, All American Homecoming, and of course, P-Valley. There are also a host of commercials running regularly promoting the use of HIV drugs that either prevent the spread of HIV or helps manage HIV that has already been contracted. Now, we all know that HIV is not a condition or disease that is exclusively black, nor is it exclusively homosexual. But when you watch these commercials, I want you to pay close attention. Unlike 99% of the commercials on TV, the major players in these particular ads are black men, gay black men, and not just gay black men, but very effeminate gay black men. And you may say, Brian, so what? Well, yeah, there is a so what. And hopefully you'll understand that so what when I'm done with this show today. Now, I watched 911 because I love Angela Bassett, and I was hyped about the show coming on, even though I don't watch a lot of TV series. I thought that anything that she's in is bound to be something worthy of watching. So I turned it on, and what I saw is a black woman police officer, beautiful, married to a black man, looks like they have a strong family unit, except it turns out that her black husband is cheating on her with another black man. But it doesn't end there, and it could, because most black women today are very fearful of that whole down low subculture. What's ironic about the term down low is that it was first spoken not in the 1990s, but actually in 1930 by a blues pianist named George Hanna, when he sang about not gay men, but of lesbian women and how they would attend these private parties with the lights turned down low in a song called Boy in a Boat. However, in the 90s, with AIDS being at that time the deadly disease that it was, and considered to be a gay disease, black men who were hiding their homosexual identities that were either married to women or dating women too, as a cover, were feared to be transmitting HIV to those unsuspecting partners. And thus the down low term was rebirthed and became popular when referring to African American homosexual or bisexual men. Now, Hollywood has not ever been blind to the fears of black people. In fact, Hollywood has created and perpetuated fears within the black community. So when I saw this, I immediately became uncomfortable because in that instance, I knew what the agenda was. Because it was unnecessary for the show. It didn't fit until the plot thickened. And Angela Bassett then ran to the arms of a white man. Not just any white man, but the most masculine man on the show. Then I knew what was up. And it disgusted me. And it didn't disgust me because of the interracial relationship. I was in an interracial relationship. I have biracial children. Again, I don't care who you love. What bothered me is why she ran to the white man. It's how the black man was betrayed in that situation that made her feel it necessary to run to the white man. It was the double dagger. So then I had some feelings about my beloved Angela Bassett. How could she, the strong black woman that she is, has been in all of these years married to a strong black man, allow this kind of, I believe, harm to be done to black men? It's the dollar. She wasn't getting starring roles anymore in movies. She was getting older, less relevant. And even though still beautiful and still very talented, you know, Hollywood has a shelf life for all actresses, especially black actresses. And so she decided to eat. I mean, we all have to eat, I understand, but I do not respect how she handled the situation. You know, Angela Bassett is still Angela Bassett. Her body of work in film has afforded her a certain amount of respect, especially in television. So I can't imagine if Angela Bassett had gone to the director or the producer or the writers of the show and said, I'm uncomfortable with this premise. Not the premise of her being in an interracial relationship, because that is not the issue. The issue is how she got to be in this interracial relationship, what drove her from her marriage. Had she discussed, I'm sure, that she was uncomfortable with how it makes the black man look in this situation, then I'm sure there would have been some allowances made. But she chose to eat. And though I have no problem with people eating, it's where you eat that becomes a problem. And from whom you're being fed, that becomes a problem. And what you sacrifice to get that meal, that becomes a problem. And so now I'm forced to look at Angela Bassett in a less favorable light, because she did not do what a lot of black women expect black men to do for them, and that is protect them. I feel that she had an opportunity to do that for us as black men, and she failed miserably in that opportunity. Down in the valley where the girls get naked, if you throw a bass, then you know she gon' shake it. 1, 2, break 'em. 3, 4, break 'em. Now, I'm not going to discuss and explain the plot or premise to every show that I mention that I believe harms the black man in making us appear to be less masculine and less capable of being honest or upstanding citizens, and subsequently less attractive and irrelevant to black women. But the music you just heard is the theme song to a show that if I don't talk about, then I'm being incredibly remiss and I'm doing a total disservice to the topic of this show. It far exceeds any of the other shows that I've listed in how it perpetuates a growing stereotype that black men have lost or is losing our masculinity, that we are all about the criminal enterprise, that our intelligence is listed at the buffoonery level. It's far beyond the pale of what I ever expected to see written by a black woman. Katori Hall is no doubt a very, very talented writer, director, and producer, and I'm sure that she meant no harm to black men in writing the series. But it is harmful because there's no counter to the drug-dealing black man or the DL black man or the trans black man, and it further drives the agenda that is being driven against black men in the media. It's almost a feel of, in order to make a black woman strong in their roles, she felt the need to make black men weak in our roles. It is that quiet undertone of competition between black men and black women that is a trap that will ultimately be our demise, and it was not a trap set by us. I'm going to read you some stats because none of this is a mistake, I believe, and it is not a coincidence, and I believe it is totally by design. According to the U.S. Census, black female entrepreneurs had the highest rate of growth, 67%, out of any other group in the number of firms they held primary ownership over. From 2007 to 2015, they owned more than 1.5 million businesses with more than $42 billion in sales. In addition, 64% of black women also agreed that their goal is to make it to the top of their profession, which is 95% higher than non-Hispanic white women, according to the census report. According to the African American Women Our Science magazine, despite making up only 14% of the country's female population, the roughly 24.3 million black women are trendsetters and brand loyalists who play a vital role in influencing mainstream culture, fashion, beauty, television, music, and civic engagement for women of all races. Of the $1.2 trillion spending power of black people overall in this country, black women now are 43% responsible, and that percentage goes up considerably every 3 years. Black women are also collectively the most educated demographic in the country. Politically, as of January 3rd of 2021, black women are 4.9% of all members of Congress, 9.7% of all Democrats in Congress, 18.1% of all women in Congress, and 43.3% of all black members of Congress. Black women are 5.7% of all members of the House, 21.2% of all women in the House, 11.3% of Democrats in the House, and 45.6% of black members of the House. And of course, we have a black vice president, and we now have a black female Supreme Court justice, both of whom are married to white men. So, Brian, what's your point? Well, when things become valuable, until they become valuable, typically white people don't want them. White men in particular discard and devalue them, as they have black women for generations. Certainly, physically black women have always been appealing to white men, always, from raping black women who were slaves, to slipping into the back doors of black brothels, having that black mistress on the other side of town, the secretary that they gave a few extra dollars to have an affair with. Black women have always been the most physically admired species on the planet, always have been, and always will be. It's just the way that it is. But not always socially acceptable for white men to be seen with, especially in certain settings, because they held no financial or intellectual or political value. Well, now that has changed. Black women are now business owners and stockholders. They are now more educated collectively than white women, have more individual buying power as a group than white women, and are trendsetters in style and fashion, music, and food that white women follow and emulate, and most importantly, have gained an incredible amount of political clout within our country. And none of this has been lost on Hollywood. Since black people have come to this country, black men have been feared by white men, by our masculinity, our strength, and mostly our mystical, mythical sexual prowess. And for that reason, we were raped in front of our women and children to break us and appear less masculine and appealing to our women and become more subservient to our slave masters. We have been humiliated socially and economically. We have been unfairly incarcerated, beaten, drug-induced, and killed. And still, here the black man is. In fact, there are far more black men available to black women in this country today than there has ever been, despite the efforts to kill us off. While at the same time, the white majority in this country is dwindling. So how do you keep a white race as the majority influence of a country of their values and principles when they are becoming a minority? Well, if you have the money and the power, it's actually pretty simple. It's brilliant in its concept, but pretty simple in its execution. If you can't kill the black man off or lock up every black man enough to make a difference, what do? You make the black man irrelevant to the black woman. You emasculate us, where that every time a black woman turns on a show that she likes or caters to her demographic, she sees an effeminate, gay, or transgendered black man alongside of him a drug-dealing black man, or a black man that is a serial killer, or in some of these shows, all three. You resurrect the fear that black men are secretly bisexual, and that the only safe place where a black woman can run, where she'll be sure to be provided for, respected, and of course get true masculinity from, is the white man. It's not a mistake, it's not a coincidence, and unfortunately, it's working. When a white man marries a black woman, and typically they only marry black women of substance, they accomplish two things. Very important things. A, they control the buying dollar now because they are the head of the black household. And B, they control the political power because now they have the political influence in that black household. This is not a mistake. The more irrelevant through emasculation the black man becomes, the more powerful the white man becomes. And again, check your TVs. It's working. In fact, it's not just the TV. Social media is also playing a huge role in this process. You know, back in the day, well, actually still today, black people are known, stereotypically, to be great singers, great dancers. It's one of the things that sets us apart from white people, even in jokes, is our rhythm and their lack of it. It's just one of those things that's always been. And again, that is not lost on white society. They have emulated us in many ways in the musical arena. They have stolen music from us, copied it, and rebranded it as their own over time. But social media is doing something else. If you go to TikTok, and you'll find lots of middle-aged white guys who have learned black music and have recently learned black dances. Now, you can tell it's recently learned just by the way that they move. The rhythm is not natural. And what you'll do is you'll scroll down to the comments section after that performance, and you'll see these black women calling them zaddy, calling them daddy, calling them sexy, inviting them to the cookout or to the barbecue or whatever. And if it wasn't for the fact that I understand what I believe to be the agenda, I would find it incredibly funny. But at this point, it's just sad because, again, it's working. Now, people can say all day long, Brian, it's just TV. It's just TikTok. But the reason why advertising is a billion-dollar industry each year in this country is because it works. The more you see something, the more places you see something, the more inclined you are to buy it and to be influenced by it. So it's not just TV. It's just not TikTok. It is an agenda that is being driven. And again, I don't care. I mean, people can love who they love organically. The problem that I have is how it's being driven by the media, and for the reason I believe it's being driven that way. So please, it's just my theory, and all I'm asking you to do is to pay attention. You know, I don't give 50 Cent a pass. I don't give Angela Bassett a pass. I don't give Katori Hall a pass. They are all creators of, producers of, or directors of the shows that I listed, and all black. But they were all given a budget by white media outlets that approve the material and manipulate the material so that they could finance the project. Please, please, please pay attention and think about it. Well, enough of that. I know you hear the music. That means it's only time for one thing here on the show, and that is the Petty. Let's give him a call and see what he's talking about today.
Good morning, good morning.
Morning, Petty. How you doing this morning, brother?
I'm good. So much better. You know, I was under the weather a couple of weeks ago, and now I'm feeling back to my old self.
That's good, man. That's good. You staying dry. Is it raining up there, man?
Well, it's been rainy on Friday. Very foggy, like soup, yesterday, and here we are again, raining again today.
Yeah.
You know, it rained last weekend, so this weather is it's a little weird. It's a little strange.
Yeah, it's rainy, but it's a little warm, so it's all good. Yeah.
It's not that bad. It's not, you know, a cold rain where, you know, the roads are freezing over anything like that. It's just a little messy,
right?
A little, you know, because of some inconvenience.
Right.
But outside
right.
of that, it's not too bad.
What else is going on with you, man? How's the sports world?
Well, you know what? Before we even get into everything that's been happening today, here we go again. I don't know what I'm trying to figure out. What are these guys thinking? What are the females thinking? Who maybe provoke these guys? A familiar name has been charged with domestic violence.
Who?
Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, excellent linebacker. He has been charged with domestic violence, and it just saddens me that these football players, well, these athletes, especially football players, letting this happen to them.
Yeah, Von Miller's, you know, like the poster child of the NFL, too, man. Everybody loves Von Miller.
Exactly. And that's why it's just so disheartening and so disappointing. And when I read about it, I was like, man, seriously, Von Miller?
Yeah.
The NFL has to step up and do something so this can stop happening.
But what can you do, man? Like, if you take a mental or psych evaluation during the combine and you see, I mean, Von Miller's been in the league for a long time and he's been perfect. You've never had any off-the-field issues with Von Miller over this time. So what is the league to do? What do you do?
That's a very good question, Brother B. I really don't know what to say. It's, like I said, I was just surprised. I'm shocked. I'm still shocked.
Right. Crazy.
Yeah.
How bad is it? I said, how bad is it? What are the charges? Do you know?
Well, not really. It's, you know, a little sketchy, but, you know, I'm going to look a little bit more into it because, I mean, domestic violence, it could have been a slap. It could have been a push. It could have been a grab. It could have been anything. It doesn't say too much on how bad it is. It just says, you know, he's been charged with domestic violence.
Okay. So, all right. Well, let's hold judgment until we find out exactly what's going on.
Exactly.
Okay.
So first and foremost, I can't talk bad about your bum birds. They did their thing last week out in California.
There you go.
And I can't talk about them because they have a bye this week. A well-deserved bye.
Right.
And why they have that bye, they are the number one seed currently in the AFC.
Thank you very much.
Hope they hold on to it because they've been there before, and you know what's happened when they've been there before.
I do. But they're there. And the other thing is Lamar is healthy deep in the season, which is always a good thing.
Let me tell you something. You know I'm not a big Raven fan, but I told you back in the preseason, I thought they were going to do some good things. I like what I saw with that offense. And I'm telling you, I really like that rookie, Zay Flowers.
Yeah, he's a beast. And old boy Mitchell, really, that running back.
Oh, my goodness. Man, you talk about a diamond in the rough.
Right.
I think they found a nice little gem there. I really kind of feel bad for J.K. Dobbins because you got this little young monster that's just tearing it up. He's so fast.
He is fast.
He gets through the hole so quick and to the outside so quick. And, I mean, it's just a great story with him and his father played for the Ravens years ago and won the Super Bowl ring. And now he has the opportunity to help the Ravens possibly win the Super Bowl.
That'd be awesome.
And it would be awesome.
I'm trying to figure out, is there a duo in the league where the father won a Super Bowl and the son won a Super Bowl?
I do know of a duo.
Who?
Howie Long, who won the Super Bowl ring with the Raiders, and his son, Chris Long, who won one with the Patriots and with the Eagles.
Okay. Well, there you go.
And those are the ones I can think of right off my hand. I'm pretty sure there may be some other ones, but those two. And we may be looking at another father and son duo that possibly could win the Super Bowl. And I'm talking about on two different teams. It could possibly happen with Anthony Mitchell.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, his father, like I said, won the Super Bowl ring with the Ravens.
Right.
And it's possibly Christian McCaffrey if the 49ers make it to the Super Bowl. His father won the Super Bowl ring with the Broncos.
Ah. What about Porter? What about Joey Porter Jr.? Didn't his dad win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, absolutely right. Pittsburgh's not going to do it this year.
But there's a
possibility in the future that it could happen.
Right.
So you are absolutely right. So there's some, you know, father and son duos out there that there's some Super Bowl aspirations there, and it could possibly happen.
Yeah.
Where the father has one, and then the son has one to go right along with it.
Right. Well, we'll see.
So moving right along, let's get into this thing. Man, they got some matchups today that... they're going to be some good ones. And I'm going to start off with a team that's trying to make their way into the playoffs. And it's that time of year, Brother B, where teams are going to be fighting for the playoffs. They're going to be bumping some other teams off, or they may get bumped off themselves. So let's start off with the Titans and the Colts.
Okay.
The Titans have done something that's probably a good thing for them. They threw that rookie quarterback into the fire, let him get that NFL experience under his belt. And if they decide to keep Vrabel another year, which I really don't think they will, I think he's really on the hot seat. I think this may be his last year as the coach of the Titans. I think they may bring someone in that has a good offensive mind that can work with that young quarterback. And I think it's a good thing that the Titans did that. They weren't going anywhere this season. They could see it. They know that Tannehill, he's a bum. And I'm going to tell you another thing that I've seen. Derrick Henry is not running the same way he has been.
No, he's not.
I don't know if he's injured. I don't know if it's the offense they're running, but it's just not the same Derrick Henry to me.
I think he's trying to get out of Tennessee. That's what I think he's trying to do.
And there were some trade rumors that were swirling around when the trade time was going on. So he may be trying to get out of Tennessee. And I'm telling you, if he gets out of Tennessee and goes somewhere that has a very good offensive line has a very good running game.
He's going to kill.
He's going to kill him. He's going to be a beast. I think he still has some gas in the tank.
Oh, no doubt.
So that's something to look forward to. So talking about the game itself, the Colts are trying to get into a playoff spot. I don't know how this 70-porn-star mustache-wearing guy is doing it, but Gardner Minshew has stepped in and put the Colts in a position to possibly be in the playoffs.
Right. Right.
Now, the way the line looks, this is an evenly matched game, mainly because it's a division game. But I think the Colts are better than the Titans. Even though the Titans are playing in Tennessee, I like the Colts better than the Titans.
Okay.
So I'm going to say, give me the Colts over the Titans.
All right.
And here's a game that's probably disappointing for one team, and I'm pretty sure that this guy will get fired at the end of the season. And I'm talking about the coach of the San Diego, the LA Chargers. I'm talking about Brandon Staley. He's got to go. He's a bum. He's a horrible coach for that team. He has a very good young quarterback. He doesn't know what to do with. The Chargers should be better than 4-7,
okay.
And they're not,
okay,
because I believe of his coaching ability. So they're going up into Foxborough to play the Patriots. And Mac Daddy Jones is just not the guy for that. I'm sorry. 2-9. Now, me personally, I'm loving seeing Belichick lose so badly this year. Because I've never been a big Patriot fan. And okay. I'm loving it. I am loving it. You know, maybe he wants out of New England.
He might.
So, Chargers, Patriots, and Foxborough. Both of these teams are just horrible right now. You know, this used to be a really good matchup, and now it's not. So I kind of like the Chargers a little better than the Patriots.
Okay.
And I don't know why. I just didn't. Now, here's a good one. Those pesky Lions go down to the Big Easy to see the Saints. Now, the Saints were the division leaders last week.
Right.
And they got knocked off by the Falcons, the Dirty Birds. So now they're trying to find their way back into the playoff picture. And they got those pesky Lions who are now the number 3 seed, who would like to possibly get back to the number 2 seed, because later on this afternoon, the 49ers play the Eagles. So this is a big game for the Lions. It's a big game for the Saints.
Yeah, it's a huge game for the Lions, though. I mean, it really is.
This is something that I've noticed, Brother B. Over the last couple of games, the Lions have looked like the old Lions.
Yeah, they're not playing very
well. Having turnovers, they're not playing well, and I don't understand what's going on. Yeah. I really don't. I was very disappointed in them on Thanksgiving. I just knew that they would beat the Packers, and they just laid a big old.
Yeah, they didn't even show up.
They look horrible.
Yeah.
Ryan Goff has looked off. Jared Goff has looked like Ryan Goff. It looks like Ryan Gosling. Jared Goff has looked horrible.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't understand what's going on. So I do think that the Lions are a better team than the Saints, but I think the Saints are playing for a little bit more than the Lions, maybe trying to get back to that number one, you know, the top of their division. And I really want to take the Saints, but I think the Lions are a better team. I think they're going to get back to their winning ways. So give me the Lions over the Saints.
Okay. All right.
And speaking of those Dirty Birds, they travel up to New Jersey to see those J-E-T-S, Jets. And, them boys might be coming along. The Riddler, who has been a big question for me, like I told you all year long, I don't know. He's doing something. He's doing something down there.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because now they're the division leaders in the NFC South. And I think they're going to try to hold on to that. The Jets are just horrible.
Right.
They're just a bad team. Right now, they're a bad team. And I think the Falcons are going to try to hold on to that number one spot in the NFC South. And I do believe that they will beat the Jets today.
Well, remember, Zach Wilson is no longer the starting quarterback. He's been yanked.
They don't know what they want to do. Let me tell you something, Brother B. I told you this. You know, through the modern medicine and the miracles that they perform, it's possible that we may see Aaron Rodgers back on the field before the end of the season.
Yeah, he's counting on it. He's talking like he's ready to go. He's playing he's practicing at almost full speed, so we'll see what happens.
And that's just amazing, because you should hear about an ACL tear or Achilles tear, you wouldn't see that person until the next season.
Especially somebody his age.
Exactly. And he's talking about coming back. But it won't be today, and I'm looking for those Dirty Birds from the ATL, I'm talking about those Falcons, to defeat the Jets. Now, here's something with this team, and they win ugly. They continue to still win ugly. I don't know how Cousin Mike is doing it up in Pittsburgh, but he's doing it with those Steelers. They bring in the Redbirds from Arizona, and even though the little big head midget is bad, Arizona is still a bad team.
Yeah, they are.
And I still expect those Steelers. The Steelers, they're in the playoff picture, man.
Yeah, they are.
Who would have thought that? They have been playing some ugly games. They have been winning them. They are in the playoff picture. I expect that trend to continue today. Give me the Steelers over the Cardinals.
I'll be honest. I'm looking at Cousin Mike to be coach of the year because he's making the most out of so little.
And I agree with you 100%. You know, they saying that he's not the coach that he used to be, that the game has passed him by, that the style, you know, he was even on the hot seat for a minute.
Yeah, he was.
And now you're looking at the Steelers at 7-4 in the playoff picture. And I'm going to tell you something, Brother B. If they make it to the playoffs, every team in the AFC should be scared because they are finding ways to win.
Yeah, they're peaking.
And
they're starting to peak.
That's one of those type of teams, you know, it's one of those type of teams you don't want to play in the playoffs.
No.
Because you know it's either win or go home. And if you play them and you lose against them, you're going home. You're not playing the very next week.
Right. And Pick is getting better and better and gaining more and more confidence as he plays. You can see it.
Yes, he is.
So
yes,
we'll
he
see
is.
What happens.
So let's you know, continue to watch those Steelers in the future. Next up, we have the Fish swimming up north to play the Commanders.
Man. That's an easy game. That's an easy pick.
Well, I want to say it's an easy pick. I think, I'm starting to kind of like Sam Howell a little bit. I still think I like Taylor Heinicke a little better than Sam Howell. But I think Ron Rivera might be out as the Commanders.
He's done.
Coach next season. And I like Ron Rivera. I really do. But I think Riverboat Ron might be done. And it is an easy pick because everyone will probably be taking the Dolphins. But I just have a funny feeling that the Commanders could pull this game out.
Oh, no. I like the Commanders, but I got to be honest. They have nobody, no one that can contend with Miami speed, especially in the secondary. They've got no one.
And I agree with you 100%. They say speed kills. So you know what, Brother D? We're going to be on the same page with this one. Let's take the Dolphins over the Commanders.
Okay.
And finally, this afternoon, we have... these two teams. This is a good one, Brother B. This is the one. This is the one right here. I don't like one of these teams, but man, are they coming on strong. And I do like the other team.
You talking about the boys?
I'm talking about the Broncos and the Texans. Man, both of them sitting at 6-5. Both of them fighting for a playoff spot. Man, listen, the Broncos possibly trying to get the AFC West. They have come from out of nowhere blazing. They are knocking teams off left and right. Is Russell Wilson back?
I don't know. He's looking good, though. He's looking good.
Now, the Texans had a shot of possibly being division leader, but they fell to the Jaguars last week. And that was a very good game. An excellent game. I like a few of those young Texans. Young head coach, young quarterback. I'm going to tell you something. C.J. Stroud is going to be the rookie of the year. If anyone else gets it, I'll be shocked.
Right.
He looks very good down there in Texas. Right. He does. I like that team.
But I saw Russell Wilson roll out to his right and then throw it 40 yards, drop the dime while
that's
he was on the move.
I saw that, yes.
He spun it 40. And like the Russell level, I hadn't seen him do that in like 5 years. And I was like,
what? I said he may be back. The Russell Wilson we used to all see, he may be back. He may have turned back the hands of time, dipped into the fountain of youth. And I don't know what it's because I'm seeing the Russell Wilson I used to see up in Seattle.
Yeah.
I'm seeing him now.
Oh, okay.
You know, he's starting to look like Mr. Unlimited. He is, and he's cooking. So this is a tough pick for me, Brother B. Yeah. Both these teams sitting at 6-5, both of them in the playoff picture. This is going to be a tight one. I guess, and this is a big guess for me, because the Texans took that L last week at home and they had a chance to win it, I think if the same scenario happens again, I think they're going to pull the game out. So give me the Texans over the Broncos.
Okay. All right.
At 4:00, this is a stinker. I'll kind of halfway look at it. One of these teams they'll have the number one pick again. They fired their head coach. I'm talking about the Panthers. Right. They fired their head coach. And the other team is just been a big disappointment. And maybe I shouldn't say it because the pastry chef is down there. And he's leading that team to nowhere. Talking about the Panthers and the Buccaneers today.
Right. Yeah, I'm not watching the game.
I thought the Buccaneers were going to be better than what they are, and they have not been. So, you know what? I think the Panthers might go in there and win today. So I'm going to take a chance. I'm looking for an upset special here. I'm looking for the Panthers to get their second win of the season. I'm going to take the Panthers over the Buccaneers.
Okay. All right.
Also, this afternoon, we have the Browns, who are also in the playoff picture, going against the Rams, who are trying to get back into the playoff picture.
Okay.
This, I think, is a good matchup. But here's the thing. The Browns are going out to L.A. L.A. is a team. They're hit or miss. They're hot and cold. Don't know which L.A. Ram team you're going to get. But you know what Brown team you're going to get today, because guess who's starting for the Browns?
Who's that?
An old familiar name. Joe Flacco is going to be Flacco, whatever you want to call him. Old Flacky is going to be starting for the Browns today.
Okay,
can
okay.
Can you believe that?
No, I can't. He should be in a wheelchair somewhere.
Yeah, he should be. He's starting for the Browns. And that little young rookie looks so good for them. But he's injured.
Wow.
So, Old Flacky's going to suit up, go out to L.A. and play the Rams.
That's crazy.
They are. It is crazy because they're crazy. In a playoff picture. They had the chance to be in the playoffs. And this old bum, because he's a bum, he got paid from the Ravens, and he became a bum. He's starting for the Browns today.
Okay.
Is there no one else out there? No one else except for him?
There's plenty out here.
So, with that being said, Brother B, I'm going to take the Rams over the Browns today.
Okay.
Yeah, I know the Browns have that defense, but, I don't know if they're going to even contain that squad today. And with Flacco at the helm, I just don't see it.
Okay. All right.
And here we go. This is the one. This is the game of the week. Probably the game of the month. This has big playoff implications. Boy, oh boy, I'm talking about the guys from the Golden Gate City have come to Philadelphia to play those pitches.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, the trash talk has started. This is a revenge game. This is a revenge match. This is a big match. This is the NFC Championship rematch up here again in Philadelphia. And I'm telling you, man, it's going to be something hot up in here in Philly today.
Yes, it is.
It may be rainy, but it's going to be a hot rain. Eagles, 49ers. And here's the thing, Brother B. The 49ers are a 3-point favorite to a team that's 10-1, that's the number one seed in the conference in their house. And they are the favorite. The Eagles are an underdog at home, and they're the best team in the league. Does somebody know something that we don't know?
I don't know.
Now, you know I am a big 49er fan, and I find that hard to believe that they are a 3-point favorite today. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that one.
I don't know. But what I know is they're both used to playing on natural turf. They're both used to playing in the rain. So we'll see what happens.
Well, Brother B, you know last year they played their NFC Championship game. You know I'm a big 49er fan. But I picked the Eagles to win that game. I know it shocked you. It shocked a lot of people. But I just had a feeling that the Eagles were going to win that game. And they did, convincingly. I don't think that's going to happen again today. I think the 49ers have a score to settle. I think, you know, they're out for blood. I think they're out to really prove something to the Eagles. I'm going to jump out there, and I'm going to take the 49ers over the Eagles today in a close one. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think it's going to be a good game. It may even go into overtime. Let me tell you something, Brother B. If you've been watching the Eagles over the last couple of weeks, they have been very lucky. They've had a horse up their butts. Not a horseshoe, not a rabbit's foot, but the whole horse and the whole rabbit. Because they should have lost to Buffalo. They should have lost to Kansas City.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll definitely see.
They've been playing from behind, and they look good doing it. But you know what? I don't think they're going to be able to do that come from behind crap on that 49er team. That defense, you got Chase Young out there. And I will admit, there is a weakness in the 49ers defense. This is in the secondary. But you talk about the linebackers, you talk about that front four. Man, and they have an old friend coming back who I think would love to beat his old team. I'm talking about Hargrave, who used to play with the Eagles last year. And I think he'd like to come back and beat this old team.
Hmm. Well, we'll keep our eyes on that one.
Not to mention, if the 49ers win this game today, they have a chance to possibly be the number one seed in the NFC. Because, see, the Eagles still have to play Seattle, who looked pretty good Thursday night, thanks to Pete Carroll blowing the games. I think his play calling was horrible down the stretch. They could have beaten the Cowboys. Okay? They have Seattle to play. They still have Dallas to play down in Dallas. So I don't know. This is a big game. This is a big game for the Eagles. I know they're going to leave it all out there on the field today. The 49ers, man, I think they're going to just pull this one out. I don't know why I'm feeling that way. It's just a feeling that I have that the 49ers could possibly beat the Eagles today. So give me the Niners over the Eagles.
Okay. All right.
And tonight. And I'm surprised that they didn't flex that game to tonight's game. But you know what? Tonight's game is not that bad because these two teams, one is trying to hold on to their top spot in their division, and the other team is possibly trying to get into that playoff picture. Talking about the Chiefs go out to play the Packers. The Chiefs have not been looking all that well, especially that loss to the Eagles.
Right.
They barely pulled out the one against the Raiders. So, I don't know. The Packers have been looking pretty good. Jordan Love has been looking really, really good.
Yeah, but they're not going to win.
This is the guy that they, when they drafted him, this is what they've been looking for.
Yeah, they're not going to win this game, though. The Packers are not going to win this game. No.
You don't think they can pull out Lambeau?
Absolutely not.
Well, it's not going to be a frozen tundra, but it's a Sunday night game. They look very good against those pesky Lions on Thanksgiving Day. And, I have a tendency to agree with you that the Chiefs are a better team.
Yeah. In fact, I don't even think it's going to be close, to be honest with you.
And, I'm going to take a chance and say, I wouldn't say the Packers so bad, but I'm going to go with the Chiefs on this one. So give me the Chiefs over the Packers.
Okay.
Tomorrow night, this would have been a better game if Joe Burrow was still quarterbacking. Bengals traveled to Jacksonville to play the Jaguars. And, I just don't think the Bengals are going anywhere this year. I think they just might as well start thinking about next year. Browning, as a young man, I still have a lot of faith in him. I think he can be a very good young quarterback for the future. But right now, I don't think he can lead that team to a playoff spot. So Jacksonville looked very good in a tough game against the Texans. Man. And you know what? They could find themselves as the number one seed in the AFC. Huh. Go figure. The Jacksonville Jaguars with Dougie P in his second season. And, you got Trevor Lawrence down there looking pretty good. That team has a nice little defense going on. I like the Jaguars. I like what I see down there in Jacksonville.
All right.
You know, I've never been a big Jacksonville fan, but I like what I see down there. And this is a tough game, you know. They're at home. They're playing a Cincinnati team that's kind of depleted. And so give me the Jaguars.
Okay.
Over the Bengals.
All right.
And Thursday night. This is a stinker. Well, I really shouldn't say that. In my opinion, it's a stinker. But you know what? Cousin Mike will take those Steelers, and I think they will beat the Patriots. That's it. I have not too much more to say. The Patriots come down to Pittsburgh, play the Steelers. We're fighting for that playoff spot. Cousin Mike's got them rolling. I think it's going to be another ugly game because the Patriots are playing ugly. They look bad. Pittsburgh just wins ugly. So Thursday night, give me the Steelers over the Patriots.
All right.
And speaking of Thursday night, I took two wins, one loss on Thanksgiving Day. Thank you, pesky Lions, for messing that up. But on Friday, I'm 1-0. Because, I knew those Jets were going to lose.
Okay.
So, there you have it, Brother B.
Appreciate you, bro.
I am out of here. You have a wonderful Sunday. Hopefully, if it's not raining down in Baltimore, have a great day. If it is rainy, try to stay warm and dry. I am out of here.
See you soon, brother. Peace. All right, that was the Petty. Always good to talk to the Petty. I miss him. And I love him. People don't understand, or some people do know, that he and I, first of all, that is my actual brother, like my full biological brother, and we are 4 years apart, but he is up in Philly, I live in between Baltimore and Virginia, and we don't get an opportunity to see each other very much, right? So I miss my brother, but what I recognize about him is that he has gone through some incredibly difficult things in his life, as I have as well. And without our knowledge of self, without our ability to maintain our masculinity and our self-respect and our dignity, we would have succumbed to the situations in which we found ourselves. So they are incredibly important. I don't understand the motive behind what Tayo Biro wrote. I'm going to try and find out, because I did reach out to her. I haven't gotten an answer yet, but I'm going to try and find out what that was all about. I want to talk to her. I want to have her on the show, actually. Maybe that'll happen. I don't know, but I'm going to try. But what I'm saying to you as young black men, and I'm talking to young black men 40 and below, yo, get your education up, get your bag up so that black women can covet you, can respect you. Get your game tight. Get your game right. And black women, listen, there's nothing wrong with trying to climb that ladder. There's nothing wrong with trying to get that bag. Just don't forget to keep your eyes open. That's all I'm asking. Do not get to the ladder and look down on black men. Don't do that. It's incredibly detrimental, not just to the black men, but to you as well. I'm not saying you can't love who you love or date who you date. I have nothing wrong with interracial relationships. Zero. But pay attention to the agenda. That's all I'm saying. There is an agenda being pushed. Pay attention to that. All right? Everybody else, listen. If you want to find out what's going on with the shows, if you haven't heard a show and you want to listen to it, if you heard about a show that you didn't hear, you can always go back to my website, voiceswired.com. I'll have all of my shows there listed from newest to oldest. I appreciate you going there and checking them out. And if you have an opinion for me, you want to write to me. I know I'm going to get a lot of feedback about this show. Trust me, I'm ready. I got my guards up. I got my armor on. So shoot them at me. Hit me at On with Brian Pettaway on Instagram or Brian Pettaway on Facebook. Either one, you know, DM me. Let me know what you think of the show. I love the feedback no matter what it is. And I'm waiting for this. Otherwise, I got to run. I want you guys to have a great weekend. Enjoy it. Sit back. Take the day off. Relax. Don't do anything. Maybe watch some games. Make some money based on the Petty's picks. But other than that, don't do anything. Because like I say, the best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. So wake up tomorrow morning refreshed, as I say every week, ready to conquer the world. Be the best that you can be. Inspire somebody. But always leave yourself open to learning and being inspired. I appreciate you guys so much for listening, and I will meet you here next week, the same time, 10 a.m., right here on 1500radio.com, Baltimore's authentic multimedia experience. Have a great week, people. Peace.